The Search Podcast USA Edition series is sponsored by PGC. PGC are the longest serving employer of record in North America and can compliantly engage contractors across both the US and Canada on behalf of staffing and recruitment businesses. Our turnkey solution offers a unique access point to the largest staffing market in the world. To find out more, visit us at pgcgroup.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Search Podcast. I'm Elliot Manning, the Managing Director of Cayman Recruitment UK and US. New episode for the month of October. Got a very, very special guest with me who I met with recently in New York. But Rachel, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Hello. Hi, Rachel Parker here, SVP of Skills Alliance. Based in New York and responsible looking after the growth and productivity of the New York office.
Fantastic. So you've been in the business for quite some time. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about, I guess, your background and, you know, how long you've been in the business for and when you made the move over to the US?
I've been in life science recruitment for around 12 and a half years, I think it is, something like that. I say the same number, and obviously time goes by, so it's probably slightly different now. It's probably more. But a while, all within life science recruitment and across two different companies, entry into, I guess, the industry quite some time ago on the permanent recruitment side within an area called medical communications, which is an area I always specialised in. And then from a principal, so I think 2006, 2007 onwards, so 7.5 years now with Skills Alliance. And that's been, I joined them as a principal recruiter, a very green principal recruiter, I would say, in London, specializing in Medcom's perm recruitment. And then had many a transition internally. Perm recruitment, contract recruitment, from principal up till managing a team of between 10 and 14 people. And then in May, I think it was, of 2023, myself and two principals actually, from the London office relocated over to New York, where we launched or relaunched, let's say, our New York and East Coast staffing business.
So you guys have been over there for quite some time anyway, probably one of the originals, if you like, I would like to say, before everyone else started to get themselves over to the States. So you've got a fantastic reputation, but am I right in saying that the business has always been kind of operating from the UK to the US anyway? So regardless of how long you've physically been there, it's always been you've always had a really strong footprint in the States.
Yeah, and that's probably maybe one of the misconceptions of we're here in New York, we arrived in May, we're based out of like this office in Fidei, that people might get a little bit misconstrued. We've been, as a business, operating in the US for years. And like to give you a bit of context, I myself have been managing a team for the last 3 to 4 years who all were hired specifically to do the US market. So two of the individuals that came over with me, fantastic people, have almost only ever recruited for the East Coast US market. And that's since they joined the business as graduates years ago. So although we are boots on the ground here and that's all very new, the only thing that's really changed for the people that have relocated over, myself included, is where we are based. We've actually been working with clients either based in New York or on the East Coast for years. So now we just get to meet them in person, as opposed to having a Zoom like this or a Teams, or take them out for a drink, which is even better. So
that was one of my next questions is where you've done it from the UK for X amount of time, you know, being now physically on the ground in the States, you know, which I'd love to get into a bit more, but like, what difference it makes as a recruiter, as a leader, being physically there against, you know, only being able to pick up the phone, I guess.
Yeah, initially, I for one reason or another, we always knew that it was going to be different from a perspective of we're able to now meet our clients, for example, and we're able to therefore drive the relationship and probably the trust further, because once you meet somebody face-to-face, automatically get another level of trust, I think. One thing that we've really found is just how much more you can get done in a day. Obviously, we all know that, right? Theoretically, like, we are, with the time difference, you can even just work solely US hours, but still, the amount that we can get done has just, it's more than doubled, yeah, actually. And so the results, the turnaround from that, everything happens a lot quicker because of it. And like I said, we were doing US hours from the UK, but everybody kind of works a little bit, you know, you'll send an email here and there, you'll pick up a call later or earlier, whatever it might be. And doing that over here just means we get way more done. So yeah, it's
such a valid point. Like, you know, a lot of, I mean, I've just from my own experience, when I'd make the trips to the US, I'm working a full US day and yes, more, because, you know, it doesn't ever finish at 5:30, right? So ultimately, there's so much going into that, and the whole 100% focus is US. Whereas yeah, when you're in London and you go to an office and you start at 10 a.m. and to 8 p.m., you know, I don't know how you can just, in my opinion, just be fully, you know, US focused, and get as much done, and have a balance and make sure it's sustainable. And I get why a lot of firms do it, but it's, in my opinion, it doesn't have the same rewards and effects long term as you've seen now.
Yeah, it's we really saw a change in how much output we could do and how much therefore we were getting back. Even just following up with somebody is completely different. So that was something that I think we thought, oh, that will make a difference, but actually that's probably made the biggest difference. And then of course, like I say, being able to meet our clients that are, you know, not just in Manhattan, but in New Jersey, in Philadelphia, wherever it may be. And obviously on top of that, you've got events, conferences, you know, anything else additional as well, where we can network a lot more. So those things have been huge. You know, somebody else said this to me before, and it's actually really true. Speaking to people that are on the same time zone, we're now all of a sudden experiencing the same day, whereas before the energies that we were giving off were very different because we were at very different points in our day. I know that sounds tiny, but it's actually really big. Oh, so,
no, absolutely. I mean, well, look, we all know that the market in the US is greater in terms of value from a financial standpoint and opportunity standpoint. What I'd be interested to know, if you don't mind sharing, is your journey personally to the US, you know, what you found when you transitioned yourself to move to America, to settle in New York, and, you know, how that was for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, because obviously it's visa dependent, it was a case of, we would have loved to have had boots on the ground in January, is the honest truth. But we came over once everything was sorted and finalized, which wasn't too lengthy a process, I'll be honest. It wasn't terrible. But I would say May was a lovely time to arrive in New York from a time of year perspective, but a terribly expensive time as well, because anything gearing up, what I've learned, so here are the things that I've learned from relocation: try not to move in spring or summer. They are the most expensive months for property. All of a sudden, probably less autumn, but I think winter or late autumn and winter, prices drop, which is like phenomenally drop. So if anyone has control of that, I would try and move outside of those months.
Yeah.
Of course, you can only do what you can do. It's expensive. It's incredibly expensive city. I've been very fortunate to visit New York both on business and pleasure probably about 8 times previously, which I wouldn't say is a lot and I wouldn't say isn't very much, but I've always felt like I've had a really good understanding of knowing my way around and knowing what the culture and the place is like. although it's changed every single time I've come here, it is phenomenally expensive. I would say probably, well, obviously at its most.
Yeah.
So just be prepared for that. Yeah. And then things that were really easy. I was able to get social security within a week.
Yeah.
The interview, the meeting was remarkably quick, and there was zero queue. It was the smoothest process ever. Bank account, all of those things that I really thought would be quite tricky were immediate and very, very, very simple. The things that were more complicated, I stayed in Airbnb for the first few months whilst I was getting my bearings and figuring out where I wanted to live. I wanted to view properties before I chose where I would be on a 12-month lease. And so I stayed in Airbnb, which there is a law passed here. You have to stay in one for an extended period of time, no short-term stays. So I think it's minimum a month in an Airbnb or something along those lines. Just be prepared for all of the logistical side of it. And then, yeah, rentals, for example, you're talking broker fee, deposits, you're talking a lot of money up front. So yeah. One is save, make sure you come over with a pot of money or that you have access or an infrastructure that's going to work that way. The other is do not go through a broker.
Yeah.
And what I did was I found where I wanted to live location wise. And then I just looked up, and I can't remember the name of the site now, but a load of managed buildings and contacted the buildings directly. And then they'll invite you over and you can do a look round and you basically pay no agent fees. I would highly recommend somebody does that because the fees are between 12 and 15% of your annual wow. your annual rent, which is a lot.
Yeah. So, new to me, I never knew that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it was something that, yeah, I had a finite amount of time to find somewhere. So it took me a while to find that piece of information out. Once I found it out, then it was all guns blazing and I was able to move forward really quickly. And then there's a lot of buildings that will do incentives to fill them, especially new buildings where they will completely veto the deposit altogether or they'll minimize it. So there's things like that that I think are really important that, yeah, would be really helpful for someone to know.
So what about, I mean, look, everyone's had different journeys with their moves and some companies are, you know, in a position where they've got, you know, 100 people that work for them or 50 people and they can kind of like flat share and room share and, you know, bedroom rent and God knows what. Yeah. Like there's so many different things that I've heard. What you've said is really, really interesting. I didn't know that was the case. So for those listening into this podcast, you know, and thinking about their move over there, definitely take this into consideration because, you know, it's valuable information. What about from a lifestyle perspective on the last kind of note on this, you know, how did you feel that it kind of allowed you to settle both from a, whether it's a friendship perspective, I guess, from a personal, like just getting used to living in New York?
Yeah, it is. It's definitely, no matter how much you can emotionally or psychologically prepare for it, I mean, you're going to land somewhere. So some of my colleagues have no people already that are based in New York, so they have access to, you know, already ready-made friendship groups, I think.
Yeah.
And also you can prepare until you're blue in the face and you still aren't prepared. Because it's weird. I'm sure lots of people have this, but living in London or wherever you might live, I had a community of both colleagues and friends that I have built up over the years. And so was very well versed in having my close friends around me on the regular basis.
Yeah.
So to relocate to a city where you don't know anybody, like I was saying, some of my colleagues actually have a network of friends here already because they've got lots of friends that have relocated to New York and are based here already, which is amazing. And then some have had to completely make new friendships.
Yeah.
I myself didn't know anybody. I mean, I have a few connections, which I'm very lucky to have. But other than that, it's pretty much building friendship groups from scratch, which in your 30s is not as easy as it is when you're younger. But then I will say, like, it's a bit more like the north here. You can make a friend in a queue. Like, it's very chatty, you know. It's more common for people to go to a bar, grab a drink on their own. It's considerably more common for someone to talk to us, you know, somebody in a queue, whatever he might be doing. It's a lot more communicative and there's less taboo around it, especially than there is in London. I think a lot of people are in the same boat in the city. They are in London, but even more so here, I would say. There are also Facebook groups. There's apps called Meetup, for example, that are designed to create social groups around hobbies that you love, around just, you know, sort of whether it's cycling, running, whether it's just a meetup, whether it's to do with if you've got a dog, I myself have a dog, whatever it might be, so that you can meet up with people that are in a similar situation, and, you know, hang out and then maybe make friends from there. So it is a lot easier, I would say, to do that here than I would have said it is in London. Saying that, I knew lots of people in London, so I didn't have to go through that experience.
I had a guy called one of the guests on the podcast called Hayden. He's in New York, and I literally just said to him, like, about the friendship thing. He went over there knowing nobody. He literally just went down to East Village to all of the popular, like, recruitment bars, if you like, and just met all of his friends there. And that was his answer. I mean, you know, when you're in a position of, I think he's in his maybe mid-20s or something. And, you know, he just wanted to go out every night and just kind of have that kind of lifestyle. But ultimately, he just met a load of recruiters that work on a load of British farms. And it was very different. But then I've met a guy called Samir, he's coincidentally again in New York. And, you know, he said something very similar to you. You know, and he really kind of found it quite tough. You know, and quite lonely, and he really had to put himself out there to make friends. And if you go over to New York and you don't put yourself out there and you're not in a position, then that may end up happening. But most recruiters have got a personality that, you know, doesn't really give them that, so they should be.
Fortunately, we tend to be a social bunch,
exactly.
Which is really good. But also, you know, organic as well. Like, for example, I was at the park literally walking my dog in my lunch break, and I was chatting to a guy that had relocated from the UK last year over to New York and was living on the upper West Side, and was having a good chat, and that ended up turning into him introducing me to a WhatsApp group full of loads of people that have made the same move, and scheduling a night out. So it can happen organically as well as using, like, you know, all these apps as well. So it very much depends on what you're interested in, but it's very doable. You just, you've got to be willing to put yourself out there.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing all of that personal insight to it. I mean, tell me, Mick, we're just going back onto the business now. You know, where are you at with the team, the office? Like, what's the plans? What, what's the goal now that you're there? What do you intend to achieve? And, you know, for those listening in and in your market and, you know, potentially looking for a move over to the States, you know, what could they expect to see?
So we've got, as it stands, we have myself, and a couple of my colleagues from the London office that are based in our New York office. We've just hired somebody from a junior perspective level who's based in New York. And now we're in the process of hiring experience. So what we want to do is we are open to relocators statewide, relocators from the UK, but specifically we really want to hire local talent, local experienced talent in the life science market across either contract or perm. So that's what we're doing right now. We have a couple of vacancies open, actively interviewing for 360 billers that want to come in. And what we really are looking for, so we're a small office as it stands, in a period of growth. We're a PE backed life science recruitment company. So we have investment, and the strategic goal of the business over the next 3 to 4 years is growth, both by organic growth and growth by acquisition. But what we want to make sure we do is not only do we bring talent into the business, but then we nurture that talent. We develop that talent and we give that talent career opportunities. So what we want is to hire experience into the office, somebody who's looking to build, you know, and then also looking to build a team around them. We then want to build that team around them and get them to a point where they pretty much run a business unit. And then the sky's really the limit in terms of, there's me in the East Coast, so my position as SVP. And then there's really career opportunities for somebody to not only build that team, but then run with it. Not just in New York, but across the East Coast and then potentially across the US. You know, the reason I relocated over here is because I was very happy, very settled, great career progression. I knew what my next role would be. And it was a good one. I was very happy. I had a great team and we were exceeding our targets.
Yeah.
So the reason I moved was for career opportunity and no glass ceiling. And also exposure to things I hadn't had exposure to, the risks, the periods that where you go through extreme growth.
Yeah.
And that's really the exact opportunity that we have for somebody else coming into the business is if you want to get to that director level within a certain time frame, but the infrastructure around you in either your current business or whatever it might be means that there are obstacles out of your control that prevent you from getting there. That's pretty much the exact opposite to what we have in terms of it's all in your hands. If you hit your targets, if you, you know, sort of are capable of getting yourself there along with the support around you, then there's so much space and room for you to carve your career out and make it what you will. And that's really, I think, what the opportunity is at Skills and what we're looking to do. So in the next, I think we probably want to get to what we call critical mass within a 12-month period within our office. But whilst doing so, we want to make sure that we nurture every single hire that we make. We don't just want to grow for the sake of growing to say we've grown. That's the last thing we want to do. We want to make sure that it's a functioning, profitable, successful business, an office that has grown because we're hitting and exceeding our targets and because talent has come in, succeeded, and then gone on from there and built teams around them. So that's what we want to focus on is not only the growth side, but the profitability and career development side. And then beyond that, we'll probably be looking to expand out into other East Coast locations. And like I say, that will be a combination of organic growth, setting up offices. And that's, I guess, where there's future career opportunity for somebody else coming into the business, as well as a little bit of growth by acquisition, looking at other businesses in other locations. Florida's been one we've looked at. We've looked at a few others where they might be small businesses that we would look to acquire. So it'll be a combination of the two. And those will complement, let's say, what we do as opposed to compete with what we do, those businesses. Yeah.
Well, look, you guys are very successful anyway. You know, you've got, and if you don't mind me saying, you know, you've got an office in Seattle, you know, which has been there for some time, you know, a good amount of staff over there. You've got someone in California, but then you've got the consulting arm of the business, which has got, 15, 20 heads as well. And
I think you're pushing 20 now. Consulting and RPO side of our business, very successful part of our business, which is pretty much a remote working division of our business. So we have people, some people in the UK, some people on the East Coast, some people on the West Coast. So our actual US business is probably a little bit larger than people think in terms of the headcount,
Absolutely. Look, you know, and ultimately, as you said, you know, years behind of doing it anyway. I think the New York side of it, with you being there now and the growth that you know, envisage for the team and the plans to bring a lot of people in. You know, life sciences in general has been a very, very buoyant market. And, you know, just like the energy sector has just been one of the most highest rewarding industries for the last for years now, you know, regardless of COVID, regardless of the unfortunate market circumstances this year, you know, your space has been very, very strong. You know, and, you know, from what you've said, I can see it just growing extremely well over the next 12 months, 24 months and so on. But again, with the right people.
Yeah, it's all about the people. It's all about the people. It couldn't be more important to maintain, but also build, because the culture of our New York office is going to have to change. It has to, because we're so small and we're hiring people in and we want it to change. That's the whole point. And so nurturing that and maintaining a positive working environment is, it could not be more important.
So
the people, the culture is one of the most important things. And I actually think it's one of the reasons why a lot of people join Skills Alliance is because we put so much emphasis on the people. We are not a churn and burn business. Every single person that we bring into the business or that we, you know, continue to develop in the business means a lot to us, and hopefully vice versa. And therefore, it's particularly important that that's nurtured, and that's probably at the forefront. Not only do we recruit people, but obviously we hire people into our business as well. So people is literally
excellent
at the forefront of what we do.
Brilliant. Well, look, Rachel, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. You've been great. And for those listening in and watching, hearing this on any platform, on, you know, those on LinkedIn that see a lot of this, feel free to reach out to them directly. You know, they are hiring at the minute in life sciences in New York. You'd be working for Rachel, and obviously, you know, listening and, you know, viewing this podcast, you'll be able to get a bit of an idea of, you know, who she is, what she wants to achieve in the States, and what, you know, she wants for the business. But ultimately, look, you know, it's been very insightful learning about your journey in the States as well. And you've shared a couple of things that I had no idea about. And I'm pretty certain people listening to this that are thinking about a move to the US had no idea what to expect. And you've told us some things that I've never heard before. So really, really appreciate that. And look, I'm genuinely excited for the growth of the business. And, you know, we're as a business that came in behind it and, you know, trying to support that as well now a bit more. So thank you again. Appreciate it.
I appreciate your time, Elliot. And for anybody that might be listening, that if you've got any questions, hit me up on LinkedIn. I will always help someone out.
We'll be sharing all your details so they can do anyway. But thanks again, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Elliot. Bye.